the one dressing all gold and black. You better retreat, cause we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.
Hello everybody, welcome to episode 334. It's three, it's three, it's four, it's the ENS Wolves podcast. I'm your host Nathan Judah, delighted to be joined as ever. It is Wolverhampton Wanderers reporter for The Express and The Stir. It is Mr. Liam Keane. Keano, come in, baby.
How are you, my friend? You all good?
Well, as soon as I saw you less than 9 hours ago, 8.5 hours ago, I would say that I'm the same as you. Tired, a little bit hungover. Not in terms of alcohol, unfortunately, but just general wear and tear. But we're here, we're doing the podcast, and we love it.
Yeah, that's pretty much nail on the head for me. Got to bed at what, sort of quarter to two last night, I think?
Quarter to two-ish.
Long old slog getting back from Burnley. I mean, it could have been a lot worse on the way back, but I'll tell you what, for those who don't know, our journey on the way there was a nightmare.
Oh, the traffic was horrific. Stopped off at the old services, got a couple of, you know, when you get those wandering eyes, that probably Wolves fans that are there and they're having a fag outside the services and we're desperate to eat, get the old prêt-à-manger going, didn't we? We needed something to eat, didn't have time for the old lunch, so we were grabbing something on the go, and there's the old nudge-nudge, wink-wink, look at that prat. Over there, look at Judah. And it's quite funny because you think, oh, well, they probably want to have a bit of a chat and stuff. But you're right in what you were saying when we were leaving the services. And you're like, we've probably blocked those two. And they're just thinking, you absolute douchebags, you two. To me and you and pointing in. But it's all cool. I mean, there's a lot of people I think I have to ask after a game sometimes. Oh, you got a minute, mate? You got a minute, mate? And they're probably people I've blocked. And they're probably eyeing me up and down going, got a minute for an interview? I'm literally ready to punch you.
It's definitely going to be one end of the extreme. They either were Poddy fans and were interested to see that they bumped into us, or they absolutely hate our guts. It was one of the two. Either way, they didn't say anything. But I would encourage anyone who's, you know, friendly to say hello. If you're not friendly, maybe do what those two young chaps did and just look at us with a menacing stare and let us be on our way.
We don't want to be honest, Liam. I'm just delighted that I'm presenting this podcast this morning because leaving Burnley last night, I'm not joking, my life flashed before my eyes. Liam Keane, you nearly got us both killed. A crazy manoeuvre of which never ever results in a great outcome when you say, oh, I'm just going to go for it. And then, yeah, we almost had, although you would have got the full brunt of the old crash. It was a slightly nervous situation, maybe about quarter to midnight in Burnley, would you say?
A little bit.
Hairy, scary?
Yeah, it was a little bit concerning. I still maintain that I wasn't at fault.
Okay.
Which I'm going to hold on to. I'm going to cling on to that. I don't remember saying I'm just going to go for it.
You definitely said I'm just going to go for it.
No, I think you made that up.
No.
It was a built-up area of roadworks and confusion. It was dark. There was a bit of condensation on my windscreen. It was rainy, exactly. I was struggling really visually. And when this taxi driver, I think, deliberately swerved towards me.
Of course.
And he wasn't very happy with me out the window. I was trying not to laugh.
Effing and jeffing.
Yeah, I was trying not to laugh because your reaction as you were sat with your laptop and almost threw the laptop through the windscreen.
It's unbelievable.
Was to drop a couple of F-bombs yourself. But I've never heard such panic in your voice as you lunged forward. Genuinely was really funny.
I was literally thrown out the car almost, you know, with the emergency brake that you had to do. I was my head was close to the windscreen. I've still got, I feel like, a bit of whiplash from last night.
But we made it.
We did make it.
And we're here to tell the story.
We are. The story, I say the story, Liam, and we're obviously going to go across over the game now. But the story is arguably, or maybe not so, maybe definitely, what happened after the game. But again, all in good time. So let's get on with last night. Burnley 1, Wolverhampton Wanderers 1. Discussed in the post-match video, I think an okay point overall, a decent enough point on the balance of the game. Burnley might feel maybe a little more aggrieved. For me, it was frustrating watching that game because, let's be honest, they're not very good. And Wolves weren't very good last night, but they definitely had opportunities where they could have got 3 points. And in different situations, with how open that second half was, it's just frustrating they didn't have the assets to fully go nuts and score 1, 2, 3 goals, because you do think that if Wolves were slightly stronger, they would have won that and won that fairly comfortably. And I think that's the frustrating thing leaving the game.
Yeah, it's partly that, and also partly had Burnley better finishes. Perhaps they'd have taken some better chances as well. I do feel a point was fairly fair on the balance of the whole game, but to agree with you, really, if one team was to pip it and take the 3 points, it probably would have been Burnley. Jose Sarr was excellent with his shot stopping. Always a little bit inconsistent at times when he's
distribution,
things like that. It's frustrating, but he's an excellent shot stopper and a very good goalkeeper, and he kept Wolves in it. Obviously, the goal itself was a well taken goal, but
and it's two of the last three with Sarr, Lee. Yeah, I mean, look, we don't discuss really the commentary game because of what happened, but if Wolves had gone on to win that game, Jose Sarr would have been singing his praises and giving him all the accolades under the sun, because he basically kept Wolves in that game. So, you know, there's a bit of positivity here. So we were quick to give, I think, people praise outfield, and I think Sarr sometimes gets maybe a little bit of a bad rap. However, you've got to think that he's actually doing a pretty decent job at this moment in time, in terms of shot stopping at least.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. I mean, he deserves credit for that, without a doubt, because he's made a number of big saves that, albeit Wolves may not have got the results that they want from those games, it still plays a massive part in Wolves getting anything, and it did last night in Wolves getting a point. And I think you're right. Look, if Wolves had, we were talking about it on the way back last night as well, if Wolves had Neto, if they had Hwang, if they had Cunha fully available, they'd probably go on and blow Burnley away and win that game. But it's easy to say yes, ifs, buts or maybes. They didn't, and they had to deal with what they had, and you're relying on certain individuals to step up. Ryan Aignori, which we'll talk about that big chance in a second, but missed that chance, but did score one, and overall put in a very good performance in comparison to some of his teammates. And I have to pick him out, because there's been a big loving for Pablo Sarabia, but if you put a performance in like he did last night, and he has done in the last few games, to be honest, when you've got, you know, he's the only fit senior forward. When he's not performing and you're relying on him to turn up, it's just not good enough. And I think it has to be said that he's not been anywhere near his fairly consistent best, to give him credit, over the last few months. But the last two or three games have been pretty shoddy from him, to be honest.
I'm just wondering, going back to the point that we've discussed in previous episodes about other players and better players than Pablo Sarabia in this squad who are currently injured, making others around them better. And I wonder, I kind of feel like Pablo Sarabia is one of those players that, yes, he's been called up to the Spain squad, but I kind of feel like, obviously he's performing well, but when you're winning games, when others around you are creating chances, creating opportunity, giving yourself space, that makes you a better player. And when those players aren't there, you've got to find a different version of yourself, a different version of your game. And I don't think he's adapted particularly well to that.
No, I might be slightly harsh with this description, but it's a phrase that springs to mind that I think closely enough resembles what Pablo Sarabia is. And that, for me, is a bit of a luxury player. He's a player who has got incredibly good technical ability. Physically, he's nowhere near Premier League physicality. But there are players, and Pablo, to his credit, in recent months, have proven that you don't necessarily have to have those physical attributes to still make a success of it in the Premier League. And there's been plenty of times this season where he's been very good and that technical quality has shone through. And that little bit of quality he did have to ping that, or lift that free kick rather, into the box for Ryan Aignori to head in last night was a really good moment from him, and it earns Wolves a point. It's a brilliant delivery, it's a brilliant run, it's a brilliant header, and Pablo had a big part in that. But the biggest criticism for me is that partly what you're saying is that you need players that are going to improve those around him. I don't think he necessarily does that. I think he needs other players around him to be at his best. I understand it's a tall order with, you know, playing alongside an 18-year-old striker and no one else around him. I do understand that it's difficult for him. But this is an experienced Spanish international who's played for PSG, he's played at big clubs, and just hasn't done enough for me in the last two or three games. And I think it deserves at least mild criticism. I don't think he's a bad player. I don't think he's a bad character. I think he's been very good, actually, in the last few months. But the last few games, as a small case study, definitely not good enough. And that has to be said. It's disappointing, considering where Wolves are at and the amount of forwards they've got available.
Look, he's not the only one. You look to senior players in the last few weeks, and they haven't stood up, really, when you've needed them to. I'm not just going to point the finger at Pablo Sarabia. There's a few others there that I think need to be performing better. I'll say it now. I think Max Kilman needs to be performing better. I don't think he's at the levels that he was to start the season, for certain. There's a couple in there that I'm disappointed, because sometimes when the chips are down, you need them to perform. And I think you learn a lot about certain players, and I'm not too sure whether they'll come out of this little lull that Wolves are having with any great, you know, positivity. At the same time, Liam, you mentioned it there. It's not easy, is it? You've got Ryan Atnoy, who got pulled across last night to, I guess, a left wing, left forward, and obviously had come back in when he needed to, when they were defending. But, you know, we'll go back to Aston Villa, and you've got Sarabia, Chuomi and Lamina. Last night, you've got Sarabia, Chuomi and Ryan Atnoy. I mean, two Premier League games, important Premier League games, and I don't think it's a stretch by saying that's probably the poorest front three in the Premier League. And Wolves are doing it at this a crucial part of the season. We're going to go on to what Gary Neil said after in the post-match press comments, but that's a huge frustration that at this important part and how they've overperformed this season, that you're fielding that front three is devastating, really, and frustrating for the fans, frustrating for Gary O'Neill, but also, you know, in terms of opposition point of view, you see that front three and you go, as well as Ryan, I know he's been doing, happy days. I mean, poor Leon Chuomi. I mean, look, I'm not going to ding the guy. Look, we've got to do player ratings, but I mean, you know, at the same time, it's an asterisk from a player ratings point of view, because he's done as well as he could have done in these two games. He didn't really do too much right. He wasn't terrible. He just was fine. He got caught offside a few times, you know, slowed the play down, but probably did better than what Nathan Fraser did against Coventry. But what more do you expect? I mean, this guy's, you know, he's out of his depth, but so he should be at this level at this moment in time. And it's just a sad state of affairs when we're putting the trust and the hope of a potential season, you know, in an 18-year-old kid's hands, unfortunately.
Yeah, and he doesn't deserve to be brought down and attacked. And I haven't seen a lot of it on social media, but I have seen the occasional
not good enough, not going to make it, etc., etc.
Yeah, exactly. Which I find incredibly unfair on a young man who has had two starts and is trying to find his way, and it's going to take him a lot of time. Now, will he make it at Wolves in the future and be a consistent Premier League goal scorer for Wolves? The odds are no, and that's because of how difficult it is to do it. But it doesn't mean he won't do it. To judge him at this point, I think, is really difficult. Fair criticism on an individual performance is absolutely par for the course. No issues at all with that. That's a big part of what we do in our job as well, with play rating, things like that. And I've got absolutely no issue with anyone suggesting that he had a poor game. But to bring him down and say that he's never going to be good enough and to attack, I know he's not a local lad, he's from Brighton originally, but to attack one of your own, someone who's come through the academy, I find bizarre. I have to admit that there wasn't a lot of it. From what I saw, there was only the occasional comment, but the occasional comment I thought was too far and a bit ridiculous. So I think that's worth saying. And it goes back to the Sarabia point. It is difficult for the players around Chuamé to create and score and win games when you have got Chuamé and Lamina or Ignori out of position around them. Ayton always been Wolves' best attacking player for the last few weeks, mm-hmm. And that's because they've got very little other options. You do need more from someone like a Sarabia, but at the same time, you do have difficulties in creating those chances, and I do empathise with where they're at.
Yeah, and look, Ryan Ayton, he scored 3 in his last 4 games against Fulham, against Coventry, against Burnley, and as Gary said afterwards, could have quite easily and should have scored probably 5. And so when he's getting into those danger positions, sometimes he's fantastic, sometimes he is a left back, a left wing back, which is what he is. You know, you can't expect him to do that. But at the same time, I think it was just the clarity and the how good the chance was in both. I'm not sure. What would you say was a better chance? Would you say the Villa one or the Burnley one? I mean, the Burnley one was insane. It's very rare that you run through a box like that, have so much space, and then, you know, whether could have had anywhere to shoot and should have probably squared it actually to Chiume and didn't do that. Or the Aston Villa chance. But either of those, I think it was frustrating because both pivotal chances in the game and the timing of those chances, if they'd been taken.
Yeah, I think both of them are chances that 99 times out of 100 he probably scores and most Premier League players score. It's just unfortunate for Wolves that 2 in a row he hasn't. I do think that the one last night at Burnley was actually a better chance because the one at Villa comes at him fairly quickly. He does have time to take a touch, mm-hmm. But it is a lot quicker, and obviously Martinez is quick off his line as well. At the same time, he should obviously score it. But then the one at Burnley, the way, you know, it was almost inexplicable the way that the ball comes over the top from Kilman, a really nice ball, and Ayton is able to shrug off the defender and create a little bit of space. And then all of a sudden, the other defender, I'm not entirely sure who it was for Burnley, but the other defender hasn't stepped over. And there's just an incredible amount of space in the box. I mean, he's 6 yards out. There's probably not a player within 6-7 yards of him. Mm-hmm. He's got so much space with the whole goal to aim at. I don't think he goes with the right foot. I don't think he goes for the right finish and kicks it straight at Muric. It's it should be a goal for any player of any Premier League quality, let alone someone as good as Ryan Aitnori. And obviously can't bash him too much because he's keeping Wolves afloat at the moment, but he could have earned Wolves a few extra points over these last few games.
42 points from 30 games. They've eclipsed last season's total already with 8 games left, which in itself is pretty incredible. It's just missed opportunities, isn't it? And they're still in the mix here, Wolves, and we'll assess a little bit about the schedule going forward and where they are in terms of the table and the European football in a little bit. However, we've got to come to what happened after this game, Liam, and we get it. We've had it 2 or 3 times, I think, but it was definitely one of those moments in a press conference where you're sat down, sat next to you. We didn't really speak about it until after you'd put your reaction up and, you know, I'm editing videos, but I think it was both a moment from Gary O'Neill that shocked definitely me and you and quite a few others as well with how forceful he was in terms of explaining the situation and the frustration, I think, of really the last 2 to 3 weeks. I'm going to play the audio now from that press conference and then we can discuss afterwards if that's okay.
Perfect.
Okay, so here we go. This is Gary O'Neill halfway through his press conference last night and exactly what was said.
We were able to make a couple of changes today to the starting 11. Made a lot of subs at Aston Villa, obviously. So we've done our best. I think it is a tough situation and there is a bit of me that's disappointed that we've come so far in the league and got into such an unbelievable position and in the cup. And then the injury situation and has caught up with us. I think the good thing is, I suppose, from my point of view, is that we did flag it to the club really clearly in January. And Matt Hobbs, to be fair to him, he was very supportive and understanding of. I was clear with them that we were overloading the players, and I felt our injury record had a real good chance of getting worse during the second half of the season. And then on top of that, I also flagged how short we were in attacking positions, and if we suffered even a couple of injuries in the top line, it would make a huge difference to what we were able to produce. And unfortunately, the club weren't in a position to be able to help us with that for financial reasons. And, you know, we had like a Premier League number nine lined up to come in and help us. And a fairly small amount of money stops us doing it. So the situation that the club is in is showing now, really. And you can see now why the aim at the start of the season was to stay in the Premier League, because we have some unbelievable players. And then if you just lose a couple, I'm trying to pick a starting 11 from 12 fit senior outfield players. You know, Cunha can't start, so he's one that can't play. So then you've got 12 to pick 10 starting players from. I would doubt that there's another club in the other 91 in the country that are down that low. And the point of all that is that that group in there that have just given everything again and they're out on their feet deserve massive credit, like unbelievable credit to fight.
So that was Gary O'Neill last night. I think we were both shocked at how he, well, first of all, how he brought that up, Liam. Not really prompted. He wanted to get, it felt like he needed to get something off his chest. And I feel maybe this was a culmination of the frustration against Coventry, the fielding this kind of a lineup and this kind of a forward line against Aston Villa in a local derby at Burnley, who were 19th in the table, and that they're in this position and they could have been so much better. And he cares. He wants to do it for himself. He wants to do it for the fans. And he was definitely trying to make a point there, wasn't he? Very much on Matt Hobbs's side, and it was them as a two. But this was, I'm not going to say an attack, but this was very much levelled on Fosun and the frustration of the financial situation that he's found himself in.
Yeah, for people who don't know, I believe he said the similar things in his radio interviews, I think, with BBC and other radio stations, and then also with Sky before coming to our press conference. That's the way it works. He goes and does all the broadcast interviews first, then comes and sees us. We very rarely have access to those broadcast interviews before he comes to see us, mainly due to time constraints, because he's going straight from them straight to us, and it's there's not enough time to, you know, physically see or view or listen to the interview. So he arrives in the press conference with us being unaware of him saying that. I asked him a question. It was about three or four questions in, about sort of recovering and preparing for West Ham, and you'll see at the early points of that, his answer there, where he talked about we managed to rest a couple of players at Villa and it helped us tonight. That was him sort of answering the question for about 10 seconds until he went into this minute and a half rant.
2 minute monologue, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. About something I hadn't asked him for. So it came out of nowhere. It was something he was clearly wanting to get across, hence mentioning it in other interviews and then bringing it up in our press conference when he wasn't asked about it. So I think that's an important point to make, first of all, that it was clearly something he wanted to get across. It was something that was playing on his mind. The emotions of Premier League football, I think, also play a part. And Gary O'Neill, to be fair to him, is normally pretty level-headed. But he, as any human being in high-pressure elite sport, occasionally emotions get the better. And you will say things that maybe this morning he might not have said in the same way. And he wasn't particularly forceful in his delivery, as you heard there. He's a very cool, calm, collected individual. But the content of what he was saying was quite stark. Now, the first thing I'll say is, I don't think it's a shock that he's done it, but the timing and the way he did it, I thought was interesting. Because managers at every club, you can go and speak to a club down in the National League, or you can speak to West Brom just down the road, or you could speak to Warsaw, you could speak to Coventry, you could speak to anyone. And the manager of any of these clubs, without fail, almost every time is going to want more from their owners, more from a player, more from somewhere else. They want something else to add to the work they're doing to hopefully improve fortunes. So it's not a surprise that Gary O'Neill wants more, because it's obvious the squad is tiny. He's had incredibly bad luck with injuries. And every manager, more or less, will test their bosses at some point, whether it's about a new contract or about a signing or a player's contract. They will test their bosses in some way or another, whether it's privately, publicly. They, you know, these are people who want to win. And also people who want to further their own individual careers. Now, that's not something I'm directing at Gary O'Neill. That's something in general where people, whether they stay at a club or not, want to make sure they've got something else to keep them busy once they do move on. So these kind of, I say games, but it's not, again, that's not a criticism from of Gary O'Neill. It's just the way that football is. These kind of games are commonplace and should not be a surprise. But it's at it's the timing at which he's brought this up. Now, he could have said this in January. He could have said this after missing out on a player.
Could have said it at the end of the season.
Say again, sorry?
Could have said it at the end of this season.
Exactly. But he said it during a time when Wolves are starting to struggle a little bit. Now, I think it was still a decent enough point last night, but they're certainly not getting the results they want. And that, for me, is interesting timing. It's a way of saving face to some extent, and also getting, I don't know if excuses are the right word, but getting reasons out there early before these final eight games of the season. And that is what any smart person who wants to preserve their own reputation will do. At the same time, he's also not telling anything that is untrue. He is saying the Wolves have got a small squad, we were running the risk of injuries, and we needed more. That is absolutely correct. Wolves needed more. They still need more. However, I do struggle with this one a little bit because he was aware of the financial situation before he arrived at the club. The club have a strategy in place now to get through this PSR difficulty that they are following through with and that they've been pretty clear about from the beginning. So it shouldn't come as a surprise to Gary O'Neill. Now, some of his complaints will come from the fact that obviously, they wanted several strikers, one of them being Armando Broglie. He didn't directly say which striker he was talking about last night.
We think that was the striker, though, right?
We would assume that is the one because they were so close to getting him and it was a big loan fee that meant he went to Fulham instead. I've seen the PSR figures. I've physically seen the documents in front of me. We've put those stories out. We've spoken about it on here, where Wolves were forecasted to be around about just over 2 million below the 105 million threshold before they breached the rules. That was budgeting for a 17th place finish.
17th place, yeah.
So Gary O'Neill's argument, understandably, is, mm-hmm. Well, we're not going to finish anywhere near 17th.
No.
Give me a bit extra and I'll bring this striker in and I'll get us into Europe or do A, B and C. I totally understand that. But Matt Hobbs's position, as he spoke about publicly, and the club's position, is that they will budget from the... be cautious and budget from the lowest possible position to make sure that as poor as the season could possibly go, aside from a relegation, of course, that they will not breach these rules. And considering where the club were at with the figures and the difficulties they were facing, I think that cautious approach is warranted. I really do. At the same time, I know I've rambled on a little bit, so bear with me. At the same time, if it wasn't for the monumental effort of Gary O'Neill and his players, Wolves may be in a much different position in the league right now than they currently are. So I absolutely understand his grievances. But I think there's a lot of things that go against his point. Namely that he's aware of the situation and Wolves have made it very clear that they will not breach PSR regulations and they've stuck to that this whole time. And I think he should have expected this.
Yeah, I mean, some really good points there, Liam. Just for clarity, you say 2 million. Was it 2 million they had to play with a little?
Yeah, around there.
And just going into it, and these aren't exact figures, but the difference between 17th and 10th that Wolves are in now, and that could completely change. I mean, Wolves could finish lower than that, is about £17 million in prize money, £17 to £18 million. The difference between 14th and 17th is about £8 million. So, yes, you think that maybe a worst-case scenario, Wolves finish 14th, 15th, and they probably could have afforded that fee. And, you know, I mean, look, Bro hasn't really done a lot at Fulham, has he, since that loan fee? Can't hardly get on the pitch. But that's by the by. He's incredibly frustrated. And I think you've said the word, and the word of the day is, and why it was such a shock, was timing. The timing of this. Gary O'Neill's stock... maybe 2 to 3 weeks ago, but still overall is incredibly high in terms of him in the club. I think his relationship with the fans, but also outside of football, maybe still pretty good, but I think it's sky high. People are talking about him, and we've reported it, we've talked about it. People are talking about it in terms of Manchester United. Liverpool has been mentioned this week. He has been linked, whether there's any truth or not, with the biggest clubs. And he's been asked about this. And of course, you know, blinkers on. My job's at Wolverhampton Wanderers. I'm enjoying it as it is. Didn't completely shut it down. But he's a smart guy, Gary O'Neill. Gary O'Neill is a very ambitious individual. Gary O'Neill, I guarantee you, thinks that he can coach at the very, very, very highest level. And I tell you what, he probably can do because he's got a brilliant mind. And he wowed Matt Hobbs in that interview, in that four-hour interview, where he was blown away and blew anyone who they were considering apart to land this job. But he's an ambitious individual, and I think the timing of everything that's going on at this moment in time and what he said last night is very, very interesting. And of course, if you're a Wolves fan, now, leverage point of view as well is important. You go into the season, you go finish this season, you sign a new contract, there's a frustration there, he wants money to spend. This all could be trying to get more money in the summer, trying to get a better contract himself. I understand that. A lot of mind games going on. But at the same time, if you're a fan and you look at that last night and you hear that from Gary O'Neill, this is deja vu, Liam. Because it was around this time last year where Sir Julian Lopetegui started versing his concerns, his frustrations. And from the fans' point of view, now they've completely changed their opinion on this, in inverted commas, PE teacher to, my God, this person, what a fantastic addition and asset he is at this football club, are worried that this same scenario could happen again a year later or a season later.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the argument from Lopetegui, or one of the arguments from him, was that he was unaware and he was, I don't think he worded it this way, but you know, essentially blindsided by not having the money to spend in the summer. And there's plenty of people at the club that argue the opposite to that. I will add that people will say that he was very aware of it. But I bring that up because Gary O'Neill definitely cannot make that argument, because he's spoken about it several times, that I was aware of the position that the club were in when I joined in the summer. I accept it. I work with what I have. You made the point last night. This is why the task or the objective when he came in was to stay in the division, because of the limited numbers and the lack of finances, and obviously they've exceeded expectations massively. Done an excellent job, and I completely understand why he wants more, and why he would be asking for more, and why he's frustrated. He's got every reason and every right to feel that way. But I think maybe slightly naive to go about it the way in which he did. And then perhaps on top of that, he may slightly regret it this morning. The way, again, it's not the way he phrased it necessarily, because, again, he's a very cool, calm and collected individual who speaks very well. He's articulate. But it was the content and the timing of what he said that he might think, could I have timed this slightly better? But you're right, leverage was a key word you've used there, and leverage is really important. It's not just necessarily his own contract or his own situation going forward, but it's also what he wants to build with this squad, what money he wants to spend, where he wants to take the club. I think the suggestions from some fans that this is going to end in the same way, I think is premature. I think it's too early to say that, but Gary Neal is absolutely a ambitious individual, and it's something that is an interesting and unexpected development in his Wolves story, because it definitely throws a few question marks over where we go from here.
Yeah, it certainly does. He was quick to point out about Matt Hobbs, and that he had no issue with Matt Hobbs. I think that was very interesting, wasn't it? One of the first things he said before he went into this rant, as you call it, that Matt Hobbs and him, they're very close, aren't they? He's frustrated, but he's not frustrated at Matt Hobbs. He's frustrated at the financial position that he's found himself in. Now, I just wonder, Liam, there were mixed signals in January. and this has come from Gary O'Neill, but regarding Fabio Silva, regarding Saša Kolarić, regarding the strikers, yes, he wanted players in. But he said, first of all, it really wrangles me, and I know people don't like him, that Fabio Silva went to Scotland so early on in that window. Like, for me, and Saša, for me, Sasha's slightly different because I know his wife was pregnant and he wanted to go, but you have to keep one. You're paying these players' wages. You keep them until you know 100% you've got someone coming in. And that's what I don't get, because everyone's so cautious about financial approaches. Why are they not cautious about players and staff and letting assets go? You're not telling me that Fabio Silva couldn't have made that move to Scotland on January the 31st or February the 1st when deadline day happened. He had to go 2 to 3 weeks before. And then you left with Saša Kolarić.
I think it was the end of December that it was actually...
End of December, yeah.
I don't think the window had even been opened at this point from memory. So, yeah, exactly.
So you're not telling me that you couldn't hang on to this player that you've invested £30 million plus in for an extra month to make sure you get someone else over the line. You can't tell me that you say in a press conference, Saša Kolarić will not leave Wolverhampton Wanderers until we get a replacement in, and then let him go a week later and not get that replacement in. So there's a fault there. Now, whether that's Gary O'Neill, who has been promised you are getting A, B or C in, you are definitely getting that. And so he's allowed these players to go. Or Gary O'Neill saying, look, I don't want these players in my squad. To be honest, I don't think either of them will kick a football for Wolverhampton Wanderers again. I know we kind of disagree with that. I don't think they will do. I don't think either of them are Gary O'Neill players. But I don't care whether they're Gary O'Neill players or not. I'm sorry, but a fit Fabio Silva, a fit Saša Kolarić has started in the last few games against Coventry, against Aston Villa, against Burnley. And dare I say it, they will have potentially been to a semi-final or got some more points in the Premier League, because at least these guys are blokes. At least they've got Premier League goals rather than 18-year-old kids. Now, is that Gary O'Neill's fault, or has he been promised that? And that's where this frustration is, because he was promised A, B and C and it's not materialised. And maybe that's where the crux of the frustration is coming in, because this is now happening in front of his eyes and we can all see it. Realistically, they're not going to an FA Cup semi-final, and realistically, it's still an outside chance of European football, but probably they're going to finish mid-table, maybe top of the bottom half. And there's a realisation there now with everything that's going on that maybe mistakes have been made, and maybe it's the blame is higher up and maybe not at Gary O'Neill.
Yeah, the first thing I'll say is that it might be worth revisiting the Saša and Fabio situation with Gary. He has been asked about it a lot, but considering these comments, it may be something to revisit. So bear with us on that. But
do you agree with that, though? Because I mean, it is frustrating, and it's going to come back to bite you.
I completely agree that I think it was, and we said this at the time, that it was a huge risk because Fabio had already gone. Saša was about to go. I think he was away at Brentford, wasn't it? And he was an unused sub, and it was all agreed on that day, and he flew out the next day. And we said at the time, massive, massive risk to let him go before you brought anyone in. And that was before we knew that no one was brought in at all. I think take this on face value. Gary has been asked about this several times and asked about it several times since the window has closed and since there's been injuries, and said, now, obviously there's been more injuries since then as well, but there has been injuries, there's been the window's come and gone, and he's been asked, do you regret letting these two players go? Would they not be playing for you now? And he's doubled down every time. Hence why I'm saying it might be worth revisiting it now. But every time he has been asked about it, he's doubled down and said, they wouldn't have played much for me anyway. They wanted to go. I wanted them to... Obviously, I'm paraphrasing here, but I wanted them to go and play. It made sense.
I mean, he's been quite dismissive about both of them, really, hasn't he?
Exactly. No, exactly. Exactly. He's been very dismissive about both of them. So if I am to ask Gary O'Neill about this and he now says, oh, it might have been worth keeping hold of one of them, it's either hindsight and he's realised an error, or it's slightly disingenuous because he's either potentially taking the rap for someone else to protect the decision that's been made above his head, or he's changed his mind and he now thinks that he should have kept hold of one of them. Either way, there's been a mistake there. Whatever the conclusion is, there's been a mistake and one of them should have stayed at least until the very end of the window and make a decision. Hence,
you're paying their wages. You're paying them a lot of money.
Exactly.
You. It's on your terms. That's. I feel like they're too generous sometimes, Wolves. Like, keep them until absolutely 100%. You know, you've got someone across the line. You've said. He said in that interview there. He said in that press conference, I voiced my concerns about the forwards in January. So keep them. You keep them until you definitely know that you've got an Alberto, a Che Adams, an Armando Broja, a Danny Ings, whoever that may be, over the line, and then you let them go. And all the paperwork can be done until you sign, sealed, and delivered at 11:59. I don't care, or at 10:59. But you wait until that, because you've bought them. They're your player. You can do what you want with them. That's an incredibly disappointing part. And yes, they've been unlucky with injuries. Yes, everyone else is injured at the same time. And maybe you don't envisage this, but the fact that he's versed these concerns and this has happened, unfortunately for Gary, he's going to have to answer these questions now, because you've forced us to go back to January now and look at this and assess it, not just in terms of his decision, but also the people above him, i.e. Jeff Sheehan-Fosun, which I think he's very frustrated at. And you can tell in that press conference last night.
Yeah, and to be honest with you, the not keeping hold of one of them or biding your time in that window is actually, I think, a more frustrating part than not bringing anyone in. Mm-hmm. And then obviously what's happened since then.
I agree.
Because for me, that's a mistake that was avoidable. Whereas the financial situation was a reality, is a reality. Gary was aware of it. The club have got a strategy that they've got in place, and they are trusting that strategy and going through with it. So to blame that, I think, is incorrect. But to highlight the mistake there, not keeping one of them for the time being, I think is an important one. Wolves are still in the... It's also, I think, the final point I'll make on this. Wolves are still in the early stages of a... I keep using the word strategy, but I think it's an important way to describe it. Still in the early stages of this under Matt Hobbs, and a new way of doing things. And that is not over-relying on a certain agent, using your scouting and recruitment team effectively, bringing players in for smaller fees. And that doesn't necessarily mean tiny fees. It just means a João Gomes, for example, or below in terms of price-wise. But João was, what, 12 to 15 million? And turning them into gems. Wolves have got... They're still in the very early stages of this. Matt Hobbs have been in the job for, what, 18 months? Mm-hmm. A bit longer than that? They're in the very early stages of this with a new manager, and this early process that they're under is still one that they're fine-tuning. So I think there has to be some sort of trust in that process, and I think there's been a lot of good decisions that have been made, but I think it would be silly of us not to highlight that specific situation with Sasha and Fabio in January, rather, that we both agree was an error.
Yeah, I mean, look, you put story about Fosun and their assets and what they're selling off at the moment and the profits that they're posting, and that Wolves is still very much a priority in terms of them, and they won't be touched. But you've got to you come back to the fact, and I come back to the fact, Liam, that Gary O'Neill is a man in demand. He's a young English British manager with incredibly high stock. We talk about Matt Hobbs, who's done a fantastic job. Everybody speaks so highly of him. Matt Hobbs will have offers, by the way, and I'm sure he has done, because he's doing so well. People want to get these success stories quickly and early before three or four, five years down the line, and they become very difficult to acquire. So, you know, yes, they've got Gary Neal at the moment. Yes, they've got Matt Hobbs at the moment. That doesn't mean to say that they're not going to be attracted to bigger, potentially, inverted commas, bigger and better projects sooner rather than later as well. So got to be very, very careful here. I guess we've spoken a hell of a lot about this, and I think it's very important. And we're always going to, you know, put this podcast around what we listened last night, because it wasn't one of those, again, there's very few in a season. But again, Liam, and I was their moment, really, which you don't expect on Burnley 1-1 on a Tuesday night. But that's sometimes why we love this job and why we keep coming back day after day after day, because no 2 days are the same. I guess the big question and last question I'm going to ask before we move on and take some questions are, 17th of August 2024, start of the Premier League season, new Premier League season, Wolves at home to newly promoted, stunning turnaround with the last 8 games of the season, Middlesbrough at home in the Premier League, full house at Molineux, Is Gary O'Neill in the home dugout?
I'm very confident in saying yes. I would be surprised if he's not. Obviously, there's a lot that can happen between now and then, so I reserve the right to change my mind, as I'm sure Gary has done on a few things. But I think right now, based on everything we've got, I think it's premature and a little bit sensationalist, mm-hmm. to be honest, to be speculating over Gary moving on or to suggest that it's going to finish in the same way as Julian Lopetegui's time at Wolves. There are a couple of eerie similarities in terms of timing, with it being April and it was similar with Lopetegui last year. A couple of small similar things, but Wolves is a very specific case and there's a lot of context in it, which we've just gone over the last sort of half an hour or so, and I don't think he goes anywhere.
Okay, and we'll finish the discussion there until we get 150 questions about what's just gone on. Let's take some questions from the beautiful people. I'm just looking outside now. I think Noah Lamina is still waiting to get on the pitch. Poor lad. Oh my goodness. He might as well put his feet up. Hey, he's not going to get on, is he? He might as well just enjoy the snacks on the bus, have his food in the buffet, and then go back again. He's not got a chance.
Mate, he's the second coming of Jesus. He's going to fire Wolves to the Champions League, apparently.
Just bring some chocolate eggs with him and some mini eggs and just munch on the bench. You're good. Are you slightly surprised that we haven't seen him at all?
Not in the slightest.
No? Okay.
There's not even a small part of me that's surprised about this. It was explained at the time when he signed, yet mm-hmm. there was still such a clamour for him to play every minute of every game. It's bizarre. I think it would be bizarre if you don't get a look at him at all. So I do agree with that. I think you have to get a look at him in some capacity. But he's an 18-year-old kid. He couldn't even get a game in the second division of the Italian league, let alone the Premier League. And he needs a lot. He's obviously got skills and he's got assets. He's got technical ability. I think there's a lot of very good positives about him, but he needs a lot of time. I think it would be odd if you don't see him at all, even if it's a cameo off the bench between now and the end of the season. But to suggest that it's a mistake from Gary O'Neill that he's not starting every game is for the birds. Crazy. Bide your time. Let's wait and see what happens with him and don't force him.
Right, the Wolfpack. Blast from the past. What? Gonçalo Guedes has made the left wing position his own at Villarreal, and you would assume that they want to keep him after this loan spell. Brereton Diaz is on loan at the Sheffield United from Villarreal. Looks like they'll move him on once his loan is due, due to him not settling in Spain and missing the UK. Would you take him in some kind of a deal?
Thank you, Wolfpack, for not asking. Will Guedes come back and play for Wolves?
No, thank God.
Because when you started that question, I thought, oh no, this is going the wrong way. It's a good question. It's a good question. By the way, on that first point, I'm not saying he definitely won't come back and play for Wolves. Gary O'Neill might be desperate to bring him in. He's a new manager. I just think it's very, very unlikely, considering that Guedes would rather be anywhere on planet Earth other than
Wolverhampton. Not a chance. And he's gone on record as saying he wants people who want to be here.
Yeah, I'd be very, very surprised. But, stranger things have happened in football. But, I think it's a, you put two and two together there, but I think it's a fair enough question, because for me, I think Brereton Diaz is a good player. I think he's proven in a short period of time that he's good enough to play in the Premier League. I think it would be something that Wolves should look at. Obviously, I don't know if they are yet, and I'll report it if and when I find out that they are looking at him. But I think it's a sensible suggestion to look at a player like that.
Stu, realistically, what calibre of manager will we be able to attract once Gary O'Neill leaves? When will they be fully aware that their last four predecessors were all shafted when it counted?
I'm not sure I agree with a lot of that. Was Nuno shafted? I mean, he was sacked. Was he? Or it was mutual, was the announcement, wasn't it? But I think there was...
No, it wasn't. He got sacked.
Yeah, it's pretty obvious he was let go. I'm not sure that was... I don't think that counts as a shafting. I wasn't in the job at the time, obviously, I'm a Wolves fan, but I wasn't sort of covering the club as in-depth as I am now. So if there's something I'm missing, let me know. Bruno, I think, to describe him as being shafted is totally incorrect. I think there was times when he would have wanted to spend more, but then in the summer of 2022, Wolves spent an incredible amount of money. They brought in Collins, they brought in Nunes, they brought in Guedes. They spent loads and loads of cash. And it was that sort of mismanagement and overspending which got Wolves in the financial issues they're in now. They signed players that didn't, well, not all of them, but some of them didn't do anywhere near good enough for Wolves and were wastes of money. So I don't think Bruno was shafted. He was sacked because Wolves were heading towards relegation. So, I don't agree with that one. The Lopetegui one, I can understand where you're coming from. But at the same time, he was, according to people at the club, he was made aware of the financial issues. And also, he was heavily, heavily backed in January to keep the club in the league. Had Wolves signed no one in January, but still brought Lopetegui in, would they have stayed up? It's a close call, and it's definitely not an absolute yes that they stay up. So there's a bit of to and throw with that with Lopetegui. And then so far, I don't think Gary Neal's been shafted in the slightest. I've already said he's been made aware from the very beginning about the financial issues. He said that publicly. I was aware from the very beginning. I've known all about it this whole time. He'll be angry and disappointed and frustrated that he hasn't got a signing in. But I think shafted is a stretch, to be honest.
Ellen Young saving this week's potty to listen while I run the Brighton Marathon. Oh, Ellen, you don't want the marathon to be feel like 8 hours rather than four. Can you recommend a motivational song to get me through? Well, first of all, amazing that you're doing the Brighton Marathon. Congratulations. Fingers crossed you do a great job. I'm sure you will. Song keynote. I mean, you had some terrible tunes last night on. Motivational song.
Great. Yeah, well, good luck with the marathon. Better you than me because I've done a half marathon and it was the most painful time of my life. So I did it twice actually and it was awful. So yes, best of luck. And I'm honoured that the poddy is going to be in your ears while you're... Whoa, you straight in with it. Here we go.
There's only one song in there.
Excellent shout again. What a tune. Although this makes me think of Coventry, which is sad.
Can we make this the new anthem for the podcast?
I think we're going to have to. I think we're going to have to. Regardless of how the Coventry game went, just forget about that. this is a really cliche answer, but the first thing that came to mind when he said motivational was Eye of the Tiger for me. That's such a great song.
God, good tune.
You've got to play
good
that.
Tune. Love that. The Wonder of Two, with the summer barbecue now looking more doubtful, are there any small alternative plans, like we all go to Vegas or go to Glastonbury? I mean, out of those two, there's definitely one where I'm in my comfort zone and one where I am out.
Oh, I could not imagine you at Glastonbury.
Like
the mud and the rain.
Oh,
and
my God.
And the not tents. Showering for 5 days in the tents. And I genuinely...
Mud, dirt.
I said I heard so much panic in your voice when we almost crashed last night.
Yeah.
I think there would be a prolonged period of panic and probably a few tears from you if you went to Glastonbury. I don't think you'd enjoy it in the slightest.
We've had some conversations in the car over the last, you know, how long have you been doing this job? A few months, is it?
It's my third season, actually.
It's the third season, crikey. About things, and we always do. How much is a good
great game.
When you're chatting away on the way to Burnley. How much? I'm trying to ask myself now. How much would it take for me to attend Glastonbury? How long, Kino? How many days?
It depends if you go for like the long early bird. So like the acts will be on from the Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Right.
Most people go on like the Thursday. Evening to be there for Friday morning, but then you can get like early birds and go on the Wednesday and have an extra night of camping and drinking.
Right, so let's say 4 days. 4 days, regular tent, mud situation, shower or not? Can I get a shower?
I think there is ways of doing it, but it's not like...
It's athletesfoot.net, isn't it?
Probably, yeah. And obviously you can buy... specific like glamping pods and things and have showers and stuff included. But if we're doing like the bog standard tents and everything, I'm saying no shower for the whole time you're there.
Shut up. Okay.
This is the scenario being put in front of
okay.
you.
Okay. And is it quiet on a night? Do you get like between 2 a.m. and 4 or 5 a.m. Is it quite quiet 6 a.m.?
Well, no, because you'll be out partying, won't you? So no.
4 nights, no word of a lie for me to do that and get myself there, get myself back again. I need to get paid 35 grand to attend that.
And the difference between me and you there is that I would pay to do it, whereas you would want to be paid.
Absolutely. You could not drag me there. 40G and I maybe go. But okay. it's honestly a question.
Well, we spoke about doing a feature with you as a ball boy, which, by the way, we still need to follow up on that. this is my weekly reminder to the Wolves faithful that listen to the podcast. Can we please have Judah as a ball boy coming up? But this is potentially another feature idea now. It's got nothing to do with Wolves or football, but let's get you out. That's a festival. Honestly, I think you would cry. I think you would hate it so much.
Oh, my goodness. How much could be replaced the keen or no keen? What's the other one? The other one's, would you get sacked if? That's another classic.
I'll tell you what, with those two games, how much and would you get sacked if, which we play very regularly, by the way.
Very regularly.
There are some very interesting suggestions that come up. Which
some interesting situations.
Some may or may not be able to be repeated on the podcast. but yeah, there's some crazy suggestions that throw up.
Reminders next week, I might divulge a couple that we've discussed. Vicky Lawton, can we confirm the yellow card suspension situation for the following? With Nelson Semedo one yellow card away and Lamina two away from a two-match ban, do they have to navigate to the end of the Nottingham Forest match?
Yes, they do. So Wolves they've played 30 games so far. It's up to and including the 32nd fixture. So that'll be West Ham and then Forest next week. So that includes that fixture. So if they get booked during that game, then they are still suspended. Well, obviously, Lamina would have to get booked in both games, West Ham and Forest. But if Semedo gets one booking between those two games, then he will miss the next two fixtures after that.
I might see Doc in his normal position rather than all over the pitch at this moment in time. I thought he did okay last night, but we were both discussing, weren't we, that I would have rather seen him start last night than not, because I feel he needed a couple more blokes and a bit more experience in there, and that's exactly what he did and found a way for him.
Yeah, no, I agree, definitely. And I think he just offers an attacking threat as well. I think it was the right decision. Maybe not as impactful as he would have wanted, but enough to warrant playing in that game. It'll be interesting. Interesting what you just said, West Ham. In fact, I've got a question for you, Judah.
Oh, God.
You ready?
Go on.
We've had one in from Max Wright.
Oh, here we go.
He's a two-part question.
Love it. Come on, Wrighty.
A zany one, he said. I'm off to Costco with family. Have either of you been or are you members?
I certainly am a member of Costco. Now, are you going to is Max local? Is he going to the Coventry one? Is he going to the Birmingham one? I mean, they're all over the country. Wholesaler, very good. Also, by the way, if you are a Costco member, make sure you fill up the petrol station as well, because you get some great prices. One of those places you get lost in. So much useless stuff you never knew you actually needed. You know, you go in there for a little bit of a wander and you come back with 4 pieces of clothing, 600 batteries, 3 roast chickens and as much alcohol as you could ever need it if there's a nuclear war and you're in a bunker. But I love those kind of places. I love getting lost in them with your big trolley.
I have been before, but I'm not a member. Is it like 30 quid a year or something like that?
But you also save massive savings there. Then it goes to your car and then you get to spend that back, you know, that you're saving at the end of the year. So
I could be tempted to do it, because you are spot on with the fuel, because I drive past it on the way to Jiu-Jitsu, the one in Coventry, and you see the fuel prices outside and it's like way lower than
amazing
anywhere else. So the second question within that is,
yeah,
if you both went on a grocery shop together for a week away,
we've
where
done
would
this.
You go and what would you buy? Judah, M&S, Kino, Aldi/Lidl. And then he said, would Kino be filling up the cart with Doritos? Lol.
We've done a couple of shops. We did one in Portugal this year, did we?
We did. The Portugal one, we were just going to a local, like a smaller store. But when we were in
Benidorm, we did a bigger one.
The year before, I think we went to, it was either Aldi or Lidl, I forget which one it was. And you looked a little bit uncomfortable walking around.
I struggled a little bit, yeah. The clientele wasn't the best.
It was definitely interesting. It was, it was busy. I mean, I shop at Lidl day to day, so I will be, I'm comfortable there with my people, whereas you need to be M&S, Waitrose, the big money, isn't it?
I'm comfortable at M&S. M&S comfort zone for me, yeah, absolutely. I think it's just the smell, the people, the prices, the service. Any time I brush past someone, you know, they smell great, they look great, they feel great, and it's just a generally nice place to shop. I don't know, maybe I should do that. Maybe that could be a test for me, going into a Lidl maybe one day. What do you reckon?
I completely agree, and if you get it on a good day, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. If you get it on a bad day, I think it's what you think it is now.
Oh, really?
So you can be crazy busy, and sometimes there's not enough stock out, and it's like, oh God, what's going on?
But if you get vegetables there or not, or
of course they do. It's a supermarket.
Is it a bit like Iceland, where it's all just all frozen?
Oh no, they've got all fresh stuff as well. But I think you get it on a good day, I think you'd be pleasantly surprised.
Okay, maybe we could swap bodies one day. Bit of vice versa, or big, or whatever it is, you know what I mean?
I wouldn't swap this temple for you.
No!
not a chance.
Those pecs. Not those triceps.
I'm dancing right now, love.
Let's have a look. Andrew Hadfield says, are we due a Jeff Shee column in the Express and Star soon?
We are. It will be, obviously, it's every quarter, so that is this month. So I don't have a date yet, but it will be some point in the next few weeks. So, yeah. Keep your eyes peeled.
Ryan Nouri says, OJ Bailey, keen or not keen, Ryan Nouri sold with ever-increasing stock building up to the summer window. What is he worth to us, or Gary O'Neill, versus his actual market value? Course, you've got this sell-on as well with Angers at 50% at this moment in time, which you've got to think that if that was the case, they would have been looking to buy that out pretty quickly if that was doable.
Yeah. So obviously that is... roughly around 9.5 million for Wolves to buy that out. That 50% sell-ons, obviously, depending on how much if he ever does get sold, depending on how much that is, it would probably be worth the while then buying that out to then sell him on. What would his market value be? I think roughly in the region of maybe 40s, would you agree?
Mm-hmm.
I think around there.
I would say late 30s, but early 40s max.
That's too low, but you know, he is a defender at the end of the day, which obviously don't go for as much money. There's been issues in the past, not necessarily, it's, I suppose, just the way that he's not been as consistent and not really come into his own up until really this season. He's at a good age, still at 22. So I think there's a lot of things going for him. That's good age. That's probably roughly about right. What he's worth to Wolves is, I mean, it's difficult to put a number on it, but what I can say is that he's an incredibly important part of this Wolves side, not just because of the injuries, but the way he's performed all season, and Gary's been delighted with him. A player that was frozen out under Julen Lopetegui is now a key member of the starting 11 under Gary O'Neill, and that's credit to Gary for spotting it, and credit to Ryan for maturing.
Oh, he's
Gary.
Voice breaking there, is it?
A little frog in my throat. It's maturing according to Gary, and I've said that on this podcast actually as well about the way that he carries himself off field, but also putting in the performances as well.
Couple more before we preview the game on Saturday. Luke says, hate to say it, but it's been a right bore watching us over the last few months. The kids just ain't and won't ever be good enough.
The last few months is an interesting way of phrasing it, considering that it was only mid-February the Wolves were beating Chelsea 4-1 and beating the teams around them. I can understand it. They've definitely not been at their, I think Gary actually said it himself in an answer last night, said we've not been at our free flowing best and most sort of dangerous and incisive in the box, and that's because of the issues they've got. Wolves have not been anywhere near boring this season, but I do understand where you're coming from with the question because of the fact that they're relying on a couple of kids at the moment. Hopefully that'll be changing. Hwang Hee-chan and Craig Dawson both got a possibility of being back for West Ham on Saturday, but we would expect, and also Gary said, that it's probably way more likely that they are fit and available for Nottingham Forest. They both should be in training in these next couple of days before Saturday, but it's just whether they can be fit enough in time. So players are coming back. Cunha's back, hopefully.
Stop killing my preview. What are you doing? You're killing my preview here.
Apologies. Hopefully the tide will start to turn.
I must admit, before we move on, it was quite funny this week. I don't know if you've watched anything. CBS, who are obviously one of the big TV networks in America, they cover a lot of Premier League football, European football. They do the Champions League. Kate Abdo presents it. Fantastic presenter, absolutely brilliant. Did a little bit in England as well, but works with. There's Jamie Carragher there, Thierry Henry, and Micah Richards are the three. You've probably seen some of the snippets, have you, Liam?
I have.
So great team, really good. And they've been getting so much praise recently. They're like, this is groundbreaking, this CBS team, because it's completely unscripted. This show is completely unscripted. No one's ever done it before, and yet that's why it's so great with the fans from overseas. I'm thinking, 335 episodes in, we never scripted one. Absolutely not one episode.
Proven by me jumping the gun on a couple of your preview points. That's why the people love it.
Because we do no work before, and we just press record.
Because we haven't got a clue, we just press record and just crack on, mate. Why not?
Just crack on. Oh dear, quite funny. Tell you what is quite funny, the kellentoasterman.co.uk prices, Keen. Oh my God. Amazing. What do you want? Microwaves, toasters, kettle or kitchen sets? You choose. How is the house going? What are you looking for? What would you like most at the moment in time? You can have anything you want. Wish list. Give me one product for the new Shay Keen.
And it's not because of
And
the
don't
names.
Say don't say a girlfriend.
No comment. I'm going to say toaster. I think we could do definitely a better one.
Okay, toaster. Here we go. Would you like two or four slices?
Well, you know me. I'm a man who likes to be on a budget. But the good thing about Kettle and Toaster Man is that you can shop on a budget and still get the high quality products that you deserve.
My God, get this guy on a readout.
That was even scripted.
That was awesome.
Right off the top of my dome.
Yeah, the top of my dome. You let yourself down there with the dome grind.
I will go, because of that, I will go four slices because I want to be bougie.
Okay, well, I'll tell you what, bougie, there's a bit of flour bants on the bottom of this. The Terrazzo four-slice toaster cream. It's brand new. It looks amazing. Different temperatures if you want it. See, I'm one who likes it kind of like not burned, but I want it brown. I want a nice brown, a bit like my tea. I don't want it kind of like weaky or a little bit. Some people just have it almost like the fluff of the bread still there. I don't want any of that.
No, what I agree. I'm the same with you. Yeah, completely agree.
How much are you going to pay for a four slicer? And it is nice, the Terrazzo 200.
Well, I could really lowball you here because, as you say, I'm a cheap.
We're giving it away for the prediction, so don't kill me.
I'm a frugal man who likes to look after his money.
Tis.
But if it's four slices, it's going to be top quality stuff.
Yeah.
You're looking at 70 quid.
Yeah, I tell you what, you're absolutely 100% double what it's worth.
Double?
Double.
So that would be 35.
Oh my God. Yes, £35. £35. Terrazzo. T200 four slice toaster in cream is brand new and it's available at kettleandtoasterman.co.uk. Right. Finishing off the podcast, we have Wolverhampton Wanderers against West Ham United. Unfortunately, I'm on a business trip and shall not be available for selection for this, so you'll be flying solo, Liam.
Yeah, what business trip to?
I got to fly abroad. I will only be away for till Monday, so I'll be back soon.
Anything going on or?
There's an event. I'm going to Philadelphia just for a few days, doing a few errands, and then this is just coincidental. There may or may not be WrestleMania happening on Saturday and Sunday night, so I may wander down, and if there's a ticket there, I may attend night one and night two, but. You know, all TBD.
If you do go, obviously if you do go. I trust you'll be going with people, with family, friends, or, you know, you'll be, there's no chance you'll be going alone, will you, going to watch something that's made for sort of 2-year-olds?
I mean, you know, you've got to save money these days and we've got to count, you know, the pennies, and sometimes airfare is expensive, as a lot of people know. And unfortunately, I didn't have enough to buy a second seat. So on this occasion, I may or may not be attending it on my own.
Oh, well, that's interesting. In fact, what was interesting as well on the drive back last night is you were because I know you're going to be sort of front row with a sign, you know, sort of, you know, making sure that your heroes can, you know, see you and hear you. You were practicing some of your call outs, weren't you? Like, oh, The Rock, I love you.
Oh my God.
Oh, Stone Cold Steve, whatever his name is, I love you, lad.
Oh. Mate, this is the people's elbow, potentially. Lad. The WrestleMania of all WrestleManias. This could be the best ever. I mean, the storylines and some of the lineup on both nights is incredible. And when you see The Rock, You've got to go and see The Rock once in your life. To go and see The Rock live is going to be unbelievable. I mean, what do you think of The Rock?
He seems all right.
It doesn't matter what you think of The Rock.
That was good, you know.
You sick little freak.
That was good. I mean, you are
let's move on. West
the
Ham
biggest
United.
Loser I've ever come across. Sorry,
you walked straight into that, lad. You walked straight into it. West Ham United, look. Look, Wolverhampton Wanderers 10th in the league, Liam, and they're still in this mix. Yes, they're outsiders looking in, but they are still in this mix. West Ham, of course, are one of the main rivals. Now, if they beat West Ham, who are currently in 7th, remember, top 8, probably good enough for European football. If you didn't watch the Keane and Judah show on Monday, it's still available, completely free to watch. We dissect the whole of the running, not just Wolves, but their rivals as well. If Wolves beat West Ham United and results go their way, Wolverhampton Wanderers could be 7th on Saturday evening. They would overtake them. They'd be level on points, but they'd be better on goal difference than West Ham. And all of a sudden, it's game on. It's a really important game. We've haven't mentioned him once in... How long are we going for? 1 hour and 10 minutes. But Matheus Cunha, thank God he is back. Great to see him on the pitch for 15 minutes. Matheus Cunha could be key to this game. Liam Keane, first of all, can Wolves win this game? And second, could we see Matheus Cunha play an important part? And if so, how long for?
So I absolutely understand people are disappointed, frustrated when you come away, you don't beat Burnley, you've lost to Villa a few days before. Totally get it. But some of the suggestions last night that Wolves, the season's over, the players have thrown the towel in, they're not interested. Wolves are gonna finish 10th or below. They might do. They might finish 10th or below. But they might go and beat West Ham.
Mm-hmm.
They might go and pick up a few more results after that, and they might finish in European position. To suggest that it's all over with Wolves, as you've just said, they're 3 points away from West Ham with a game in hand, I find ludicrous. Wolves are absolutely in this race. Now, it's going to be difficult. They've got injuries, they've got, well, players are coming back, but they've still got injuries to contend with. And it's not, you know, there's no easy games in the Premier League, and West Ham is one of them, absolutely. It's not going to be an easy game by any means. But to suggest that it's over now, before this West Ham game, I think is craziness. Wolves have got a big opportunity in front of them still, and even though the odds might be against them, it's there and they can take it. Can Wolves beat West Ham? Absolutely they can. Now, they don't have the best record against them recently, but there's no reason whatsoever that they can't turn it on the day in front of a home crowd and beat West Ham. It's only going to be themselves that denies them. Now, West Ham are a good side with good players, but Wolves are good enough to beat them. Absolutely. That's the first thing I'll say. I think it's ridiculous to suggest that Wolves are completely out of this race. Now, do they need to win this game to stay in the race? I don't think they need to win it to stay in it, but it would be a big help. It's going to become really difficult if they don't win it to continue that momentum. But there are games available, as I say, game in hand over West Ham as well. The chances are there. And as you've just said there, Matheus Cunha, having him back, is going to be absolutely crucial in these final 8 games. I think it's very unlikely he starts on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
More likely, if he gets more minutes on Saturday, more likely to start the following week. But even that, potentially they might be cautious with him. So I wouldn't expect that, but if he played about 20 minutes or so last night...
They said 20 was his max. I think he was a little bit under that potential. Well, he came on 75th, so with injury time, I guess it was 20 minutes, wasn't it? You think maybe half an hour now, or maybe a little bit more? Or if he was not working at half-time, could you see him maybe introduced in the second half?
I think it could be anywhere between 20 again, only because of how quick the game is after Tuesday, obviously.
20 and 45, would you say?
20 and 45 and a potential half-time introduction. But it's very much dependent on how the game's going. So, they'll absolutely want him to get more minutes. And Gary was pleased to say that he was fine coming out of those 20 minutes at Burnley. So he'll definitely play a part in the game, barring any setbacks between now and Saturday. And he's going to be a massive, massive part of Wolves' final 8 games end of the season.
Yeah, and he did say, and you mentioned it there, Liam, that Dawson and Hwang have a chance, but more likely Nottingham Forest. So, you know, you could have a situation where you're going into Nottingham Forest. Let's say you can get a result here. Let's say you can get a win somehow, by hook or by crook, get a win against West Ham. And like you say, it is very achievable, especially at home. But if you can do that and go to Nottingham Forest and you've got maybe a Cunha who might be ready to start, maybe not 90 minutes, maybe 60 minutes, well, if you've got Hwang Hee-chan back in your squad, if you've got Craig Dawson starting again, then all of a sudden you start to look like, oh, OK, we might be seventh here and we're getting a couple of our players back and, you know, of our starting main 11, only we're only missing Pedro Neto. So things can change very, very quickly as well. And that point last night could be an important point when you come to the end of the season. All we want is a sweat. And by the way, you're completely right in what you say. It's staggering, really, when you think that people say, well, it's all over, going to finish 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, whatever. Yes, they might do that. I find it difficult as well when people say, why do we want European football? That would be a disaster. We don't want European football. We can't manage it with our squad. Are you kidding me? What's the point of going to games? Like, why are we doing it? Like, of course you're going to want European football for your club. You want to go and see your club play against some of the best teams in Europe, and you want to be in some of the competitions, like whether they're losing the first round or not. You want your club to be in as many competitions as possible, surely.
Oh, yeah. It baffles me, anyone who says that.
I can't understand it.
Makes no sense at all. There's no point in turning up and watching or playing football then if you don't want to win and don't want to do the best you can. So that's craziness to me. It really is. Wolves are still in this race, absolutely. I'm not saying that they're going to do it.
No.
I think it's going to be really difficult. It really will, really, really difficult. But this team have overcome adversity before. To suggest that they're not in the race still is silly. And it's a massive game. It's a massive game if they want to try and get into Europe.
Right. There was changes in personnel. There were changing tactics. There were changes to a certain extent in formation last night. You've said to me, and I'm going to quote you here because I completely agree. So it is a shot in the dark. I've got no idea what team or what formation Gary Neil could pick against West Ham. It could be a combination of so many different options. It really could. I'll mention a few players, Liam, who I think will be maybe at risk to a certain extent. But Santi Bueno was on the bench last night. We've talked about Mateus Cunha. Tommy Doyle was an unused substitute last night. Does he come in? Boubacar Traore was used. Leon Chiuomi's played two games in a row. Not really had an impact. Look, beggars can't be choosers, but can you see the likes of a Doyle, a Boubacar Traore, a Santi Bueno, you know, maybe a Nathan Fraser coming back into the mix for this game?
Yeah, I'm really struggling with what the team might be for this one because it's a really tough one to call. But I've got an 11, which I'm gonna suggest.
Okay.
And I think it will be back to a 5. Santi Bueno back in, but with 8 Norris still in the front three. So I think Sarr in goal, Semedo, Santi Bueno, Kilman, Totti, Hugo Bueno, Lamina and Gomez, albeit with a caveat of Doyle didn't play at all on Tuesday. There's a good chance he could come in. So I think I'll mention that, but I'm going to
For João Gomes, you would say.
Yeah,
I know Lamina still
so.
Didn't... It was good to see him back in a central position, but didn't have probably an impact on the game that he would have wanted. But he's an automatic start, isn't he, of course?
I think so, yeah. And then Sarabia and Aitnori, mm-hmm. either side of one of the young strikers. And I'm going to go with Fraser. I think he might get another opportunity again. It's a tough one to call between those two, but if it's not one of those two and they're both on the bench and all of a sudden it's someone else, I'll be quite surprised.
Yeah. Difficult, isn't it? Do you think Nathan Fraser will have been disappointed to have missed out on the two away games?
Of course he'll be disappointed. He'll want to play. Of course he will. But if he's honest, I think there's no real excuse for that Coventry performance from him. And that, it's the same with Chiuomi, it's not a sort of an attack on him because he's a young man who's trying to find his way. And I don't you can criticise a performance, which I think is fair, but to suggest that he's a terrible footballer will never make it, if anyone has made those suggestions, I think is silly. So it was a poor performance from him. And I think he'll recognise that. And Chiuomi's been given an opportunity. Don't think he's made any bigger of an impact, particularly. They're fairly close, really, the two of them on level, I would suggest. And that's why I think maybe we might see Fraser get an opportunity with the opportunity to right a couple wrongs.
And anyone who was thinking Bellegarde is going to be a little bit longer, right?
Yeah, we're still waiting. Hopefully we'll find out a bit more on Friday with the press conference. But we are still waiting to get a bit more of a timeline on him. but definitely not for the weekend. And it sounds like not for the following week either, but we'll hopefully have a bit more on that pretty soon.
What are we giving away, Bebe?
Oh, we've got to give a toaster away.
Let's give a toaster away. Let's give a let's give an away shirt away. And let's give away a WrestleMania shirt. How's that?
Oh, my word. That is big.
That is huge. I'll go first and we'll go with your prediction, Mr. Liam Keane. I'm going to stick to the prediction that I had on Monday in the Keane and Judah show. I predicted a draw, as did you, for the Burnley game. We were both correct on that. I said a draw for this game as well. I'm going to say Wolverhampton Wanderers 2. It's a Desmond baby. It's 2-2. Really, really concerned about the likes of Bowen, the likes of Kudus, I think, you know, Paqueta. But Bowen and Kudus really, I think, are the standouts. And Antonio's starting to score. He's playing regularly and looks fit. Of course, Wolves linked with Antonio as well, weren't they, for quite a long time. So I think it'll be 2-2. Score draw for me. Liam?
Well, on the Keane and Judah show, I did predict a win.
Okay.
So I think I'm going to have to stick with that.
Well, you got no. I mean, you don't have to.
Oh, well, I'm going to.
Okay.
You have gone for a...
Desmond.
Four-goal thriller.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go for a five-goal thriller.
Oh, baby! 5-0 Wolves.
Wolves 3.
Oh, what a
West
game.
West Ham 2.
Oh, my word. What a game.
Let's do it.
That barbecue, I can smell it from here.
Oh, my word. I really, even if there isn't a public barbecue because Wolves... don't make you up. Can you just put on a barbecue for me anyway?
100%. And we'll live tweet it.
Oh, perfect. I'll go down well.
Should you want to ask the eight ball the question and I'll shake it, baby, before we finish?
Okay. Eight ball.
Mm-hmm.
With all your wisdom.
Yes, Liam. Award winning this.
Will Wolves beat West Ham on Saturday?
I shall tell you.
That noise is awful, man. Can't be having that on the podcast. That's so bad.
Oh, no. Don't count on it.
Oh, eight ball. Oh, the eight ball's done us.
Oh, dear. Right. We've run over 81 minutes. Look, a lot to talk about, a lot to dissect. Hopefully we've explained what we can and you're in a better position than you were at the start of the podcast. I've thoroughly enjoyed it, Liam. Enjoy Saturday. I'll see you next week. And of course, we'll have the return of the Nuno versus Gary O'Neill in a couple of weeks' time. But from me, from Keane, have a great weekend. See you at Molyneux on Saturday. Take care. Bye-bye. Retreat, because we're on the attack. The strength of the wolf is the strength of the pack. We're Wolverhampton, we're on our way back.